Good afternoon. I got a couple of things I want to talk about just prior to. We are going to be in the book of Numbers, and we're going to be in the sixth chapter. But before we go there, there's something I did not speak last week on in the fifth chapter, which I thought was going to do so, but I didn't. It's very fascinating that in the very first part of Numbers 5, he's talking about when someone has done something wrong. And verse 5 is, "Then Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto children of Israel, and when a man or woman commits any sin that does harm to or unfaithful against Yahuwah, and that person is guilty, then he shall confess his sin, and he has committed, he shall restitute his trespass in full, plus one-fifth." Now, it's interesting here that he says here, now if a man who has done harm to somebody, who gets the reward? The victim. I find that very, very fascinating. In the very, very beginning, God is saying, no, the penalty you're going to pay, because this is transgression against God himself when you do harm to somebody. But you don't pay him unless there is no living relative. Then you pay the priesthood. I find that funny, you know, when the Torah says there are three big things, the Messiah says three big things, one of them is justice. And, you know, we live in a society that if you do harm to somebody, what do we do with them? We don't make them pay the victim. We just throw them in prison, we fine them, and the money goes to, not the victim, goes to the judge, the lawyer, the press, the government, whatever it is. It never gets to the person who has done the harm, and God wants 20% reimposed, so it's even a 20% penalty when you do something to somebody of any which shape or form. I thought that was very fascinating in the fifth chapter. Didn't get mentioned that last week because we were really involved with some of that subject matter. Okay, go ahead and read.
"Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When either a man or woman consecrate an offering to take the vow of a Nazarite to separate himself to the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and similar drink. He shall drink neither vinegar made from wine, nor vinegar made from similar drink. Neither shall he drink any grape juice, nor eat fresh grapes or raisins. All the days of his separation he shall eat nothing that is produced by the grapevine, from seed to skin. All the days of the vow of his separation no razor shall come upon his head, until the days are fulfilled for which he separated himself to the Lord. He shall be holy. Then he shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow. All the days that he separates himself to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead body. He shall not make himself unclean even for his father or his mother, for his brother or his sister, when they die, because his separation to God is on his head. All the days of his separation he shall be holy to the Lord. And if anyone dies very suddenly beside him, and he defiles his consecrated head, then he shall shave his head on the day of his cleansing. On the seventh day he shall shave it. Then on the eighth day he shall bring two turtle doves or two young pigeons to the priest, to the door of the tabernacle of meeting. And the priest shall offer one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering, and make atonement for him, because he sinned in regard to the corpse. And he shall sanctify his head that same day. He shall consecrate to the Lord the days of his separation, and bring a male lamb of its first year as a trespass offering. But the former days shall be lost, because his separation was defiled. Now this is the law of the Nazarite: when the days of his separation are fulfilled, he shall be brought to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and he shall present his offering to the Lord. One male lamb in its first year without blemish as a burnt offering, one ewe lamb in its first year without blemish as a sin offering, one ram without blemish as a peace offering. a basket of unleavened bread, cakes of fine flour mixed with oil, unleavened wafers anointed with oil, and their grain offering with their drink offerings. Then the priest shall bring them before the Lord and offer his sin offering and his burnt offering, and he shall offer the ram as a sacrifice of a peace offering to the Lord, with the basket of unleavened bread. The priest shall also offer its grain offering and its drink offering. Then the Nazarite shall shave his consecrated head at the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and shall take the hair from his consecrated head and put it on the fire, which is under the sacrifice of the peace offering. And the priest shall take the boiled shoulder of the ram, one unleavened cake from the basket, and one unleavened wafer, and put them upon the hands of the Nazarite after he has shaved his consecrated hair. And the priest shall wave them as a wave offering before the Lord. They are holy for the priest, together with the breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the heave offering. After that, the Nazarite may drink wine. This is the law of the Nazarite who vows to the Lord the offering for his separation. And besides that, whatever else his hand is able to provide according to the vow which he takes, so he must do according to the law of his separation. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, This is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. So they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them.
Okay, a lot of things to go through here today, and sometimes we are going to try to figure it out on our own. And so let's start. You got any questions, any thoughts, any ideas? We'll do just a little bit different today. I'm going to let you do the thinking. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to stand here. I'm going to listen. I'm good at that, right?
This begs a question. It is said that Samson was dedicated to the Nazarite his entire life, right?
Correct.
And it also says that if you are in the presence of a person who dies, then you basically have to go back to the temple, give your sacrifices, shave your head, and start all over again with your vow from step one because your hair has been defiled or whatnot. So this begs the question. It is said in the Bible that Samson, at least on one occasion it is recorded, he took the jaw of a donkey and killed a bunch of people with it.
Yeah, he shouldn't have did.
What happened to his consecration on his head at that point? Because he was in contact with
the
dead.
We will talk about that. That's a very interesting point. And we'll cover this thing very, very in detail, because I've got the book of Judges opened up here, because that's an important section. There was one other man that his mother sanctified him, and that was Samuel. And Samuel never had his hair cut all the days of his life. And he never touched wine or anything in association with the grape, just as much as Samson did. Yes.
Then Samuel would have had the same dilemma when he killed Agag, the king of the Amalekites.
Yes.
So, what happened?
Yeah. What happened, yeah. David, he's got to run faster there, Jeff.
The thing that always amazes me is the offerings that are put up. You know, they want a female lamb, a male lamb, and a ram. To me, that's just seemingly very costly for today. What we know, what going and buying those things, as a whole lamb on the hoof, as they say, or whatever, on the foot, whatever. It just is very costly to go through this thing and all the other things.
Plus, required the life of three animals.
Three animals, yeah.
And it also required, of course, the grain offering and the oil offering and what's called the drink offering. Everybody pay that very carefully attention to. The drink offering was always a wine offering. Though he would not to drink it, he could bring it. Okay?
If a man drops dead in front of you, it is a sin to you. How is it a sin to you when it's not any form of what you've done? Somebody just drops dead in front of you. How are you sinning?
Good question. Do you have statement on that? Daniel has a statement on that.
Well, just because someone dropped dead in front of you, yeah, you think, oh, well, see, that person did something. I was no action of my own. Well, that's because you're looking at the term sin as something that you've done or
right.
haven't done. Well, that's not how the Bible defines it. We think of, we've talked many times, it's missing the mark. Well, that's true, but someone can be sin or full of sin or have sin on them or something thrust upon them. If I touch something that is unclean, I'm unclean. And unclean and missing the mark, meaning sin, are one of the same thing as far as the Torah is concerned. Once I'm unclean, I am now sinful. I'm now no longer, I have sin upon me. So a dead person dropped it in front of me. Presumably, I touched them during the process because, you know, if I'm sitting next to him and he drops, I'm going to try to catch him because thinking he's just injured or something. That sin or that contamination is not on me. Thus, I am no longer justified in front of God. That's all it's referring to.
That's all it is. Does that explain that answer to you? And so, therefore, he had to give a sin offering for a reason, and that is for cleansing us to become pure again. We walk in this world, and we never think about ourselves ever doing anything wrong. You know, you could pick up a dead cat. Okay, he didn't sin. You got to put that thing in the garbage can or bury it somehow. But then there has to be a cleansing taking place. Okay, we physically clean ourselves because you've got the dead animal, number one, and that's bad news for you. You know, you purify yourself. But in relationship to spiritual concept, death has a very distinct meaning to God. What does death mean to God? Why is it so important? So what?
Separation
from life. Death is a separation from life. Apostle Paul said something about death. What did he say? It is our last enemy. It's not our friend. It's our enemy. So in God's viewpoint, we look at this point, the very beginning of Adam and Eve, the enemy was death. And God had to institute the death sentence. It's not that God loves it. He had to institute it. Because of now, Adam and Eve became unclean. Can't be in the presence of God. And the Torah goes on more and explains. Any more questions about what's going on here? We have either a statement or question.
There's no point about, I thought that when a man or was a Nazirite, that there was the separation from a woman as well, that they could not be with a woman.
That's a different location or a different purpose. That's true. We're not, but this is not what the situation is about. This is truth. What you're saying is true, but we're not talking about that. In this particular chapter, we got to clarify this particular statement first. So what have we learned so far from this book? It's kind of a puzzling chapter to a great degree, right? Now, this one particular chapter uses a certain verb and noun more than any other chapter in all or any other section of the book. And the Hebrew word for to separate, the verb form is nazir, nazir. When you're in the state of being separation, it's not nazir, it's nazir. Same spelling, but pronounced different. One's a verb and one's a noun. Now, that's where they get the word Nazirite, by the way. He is to do something. What is he going to do? What is it? What is his object? He's going to Nazir unto whom? Okay. Well, now, we have heard all sorts of stories in the past, or explanations in the past, you know. It means serving in the temple. No, that didn't happen with Samson at all. He didn't serve the temple at all, did he? Well, it has to do with being like a priest. No. Samson was not ever serving as a priest. So this separating yourself for a reason has to be for the reason because it's unto God and not unto anything else. That's the primary thing to keep track here. This is the reason why you could take a Nazarite quote vow, end of quote, and have nothing to do with a church, organization, or anything else. Anybody can do it. But, okay, you're doing it unto and you're doing in the name of. Okay, so when you start using the name of the Creator of heaven and earth, all of a sudden it becomes serious. Some people take a, quote, vow, if I use that word, based upon their dead mother in the grave. You know, I swear on my mother's grave. Well, what's that going to do? She's dead. You know, it doesn't work. But when you talk about talking unto God, then God expects something very precise out of it. Now, when someone, my personal opinion, this is Richard Age's personal opinion, when someone decides to take a Nazarite vow today, and they accidentally pick up a glass of wine, that's not what it says. You're not to start over. You have now broken the vow. If you happen a dead person comes to ground, or you happen to fall upon a dead person, now that's not something you're doing. It just happened to you. But if your mom or your dad, your brother or sister in this vow, and you decided to go to their funeral, that's okay, but don't touch the body. If the person is dead and you weep and you sorrow and you lean over and give your mom a big hug and she's dead, you broke the vow. That's a different than anything else. Now, this is the reason why I kind of take it very seriously that we have to take our thought that when someone decides to take a vow, they have to pay attention very carefully what it is that God is requiring of them, if they choose to do so. It's not a casual thing that people should do, taking a vow and just says, oh, it didn't work, I'll start again. Oh, it didn't work, I'll start again. Oh, it didn't work, I'll start again. It's making something that God says, are you listening to me? If you're going to do it. Now, why is it a... Remember, this vow, the Nazarite vow, is one that you are separating yourself from something. And you're joining yourself to something. All right? Question. One of the very odd and unusual things, and I would like for you to think about this, why grapes? Any kind. Even the seed. Why grapes? Why grapes? First thing mentioned is grapes. Why grapes?
Would it be because of the vine symbolism? I'm the vine, you are the branches.
All right. If that is true, put this, let me carry through what she said first. If that is true, then one must separate themselves from the vine, the rest of the entire congregation, not have association with or fellowship with it, until they have fulfilled and they're joining themselves now unto the Father or to the Creator of heaven and earth and saying, now this is what I want to do. And you say, okay. So are you separating yourself from the Messiah? Are you separating yourself from the vine? What does that have to do with the Messiah? Your statement.
Well, wine is a symbol of joy, but too much wine can lead you into sin.
Well, it's true, but this is not talking about sin. Seeds from a grape seed not going to get me drunk.
No.
All right? Okay. It's not going to work. Even Samson, remember, wouldn't even walk in the vineyard, be touched by the leaves, because that's not, he couldn't do that. I mean, leaves are sinful? Well, that's a pretty tough question, isn't it? Quickly?
More as a question. I've come to understand that once a grape is picked, within 15 to 20 seconds, it can start fermenting.
Well, that's true. But what about the leaf? It doesn't make sense. Daniel. So we're doing some challenging here. We've got to ask some tough questions here, don't we?
Well, I'm not saying I'm right, but I have an opinion on this. The fruit of the vine is very specific about what its value is. And God, as we always say every Shabbat, Brave Priya God, created the fruit of the vine. If when you touch any form of the grape when you're under vow, you're actually stealing from God, because it's His vine, it's His grape, He's producing it, not for you, for Himself. So if I take a seed, if I take a grape, I touch it at all, I'm stealing from God Himself. So you don't steal from God, that's a whole other sin you just dumped on top of your own actions. So this Nazirite vow, you are declaring, God, everything I do, all my actions, all good things, are yours. That's the symbolic idea behind it. So if I take grapes, God made those grapes, I'm taking them back. So, yeah, God, I did stuff for you, but you know, I want a little back. That's stealing. So don't touch the grape, don't touch the seed, don't do anything about it. You stole from Him.
Fascinating statement, right?
The grape and not bread, say.
Who makes the bread? The bread doesn't grow on a tree.
No.
The bread is created by stuff. Okay. It didn't say you can't touch seeds, like, you know, wheat seed. Those are, there's nothing regarding it. Bread is a separate item. We actually crush that, we manufacture it. God doesn't make the bread.
Yeah. You bury a loaf of bread and it's just it rot. You bury a seed of a grape, it's going to grow. That belongs to God. Interesting approach.
I was thinking maybe, the thrust of this oath, this Nazarene vow is separation. So therefore, you know, having no other influence symbolically by wine, you know, or, you know, anything of the
even,
vine.
Even the leaf of the wine.
Would be
even
an leaf. Influence, a foreign, something foreign
it
to what you're
be,
drinking spiritually.
It doesn't say that. That's why you have to pay attention very carefully what the object here is. Doing it, or having grapes, and having seed, and having the vine, and that's not against God's law. In fact, He expects you to plant it, and He expects you to grow from it, because who is it? He is a vine dresser, right? He's the one that keeps control of the vine and all the branches. And it comes along and He clips from the branches what He wants. What do you think He's taking? He's taking you. He's taking me. We belong to Him. Now, when someone had this particular point, when someone takes a, quote, Nazirite vow, end of quote, is because they are going to accomplish something. Something that God will honor. Not that they will be honored by God, but something that God would honor. Right? Simple explanation. So now, rule number one is no grapes. Rule number two is no cutting the hair. Rule number three is what? I have to get to here because we're going to go through rule number one and two pretty quick here. I mean, I found what my other rule is. It was three rules I wrote down. Anyway. Okay. We're going to talk about the word. Nazar. Or Nazir, separation. You're doing a separation. Do you know how often that word, that noun, is used in the Bible? Not more than you would think. And it's funny that hair is involved. In the book of Corinthians, don't accept where it's at, right off the end, but talking about the covering of a man and the covering of a woman. Right? And it talks about the hair. Right? We all kind of know that. It's pretty clear about that. And very fascinating here that a Nazirite is not to cut his hair. Why? I thought it was a shame for a man to have long hair. Oh, was Samson ashamed all the days of his life? Was Samuel ashamed all the days of his life? So where is the Apostle Paul addressing this subject matter? Why is it important? And he says the woman's hair is what? And it's a glory unto... glory unto her head. Glory unto her husband. That's why it's there, right? That's what the Apostle Paul is saying. I mean, you can disagree, that's okay. I say that's what he's saying there, right? Now, as we come before God, the Nazarite vow is coming before God, the man has to do something, and the women will always have the hair long, no matter what. But the man now, he has to shave it off, the hair, not his beard, just the hair. Now, it's shaved, doesn't mean it's bald. It means it's just cut short again, like normally being cut short. Now, in this word that we use, separation, it has got a very interesting meaning. And I want to go, you don't have to turn here, I'm going to read some things off. You'll recognize them. In Exodus 29, verse 6, and you shall put the turban on his head, meaning Aaron, and put the holy crown on his turban. In Hebrew, you shall put the holy Nazir on the turban. Nazir? Okay. And what was on that Nazir? What would the Nazir say? Holy? What? Kadosh Yahuwah. Kadosh HaYahuwah. Now that's where the separation, that first shows up, a separation right there in the very beginning of Exodus. Not beginning of Exodus, but in that location. So now, when you start separating yourself for a Nazarite vow, is to be what unto God? Holy unto Him, not to others. All right? The word is used at other places. Leviticus verse 9, verse 8, verse 9, talks about the very same thing about Aaron, and that he is to have the holy Nazir on the turban. Nazir, the separation, the symbol that says holy unto Yahuwah, or Yahweh, Kodesh Yahuwah, Kodesh Eloh Yahuwah. Okay, that's La Yahuwah. Here we are. There's this symbolism. And what does that tell everybody? Who's holy to God? Aaron. Aaron's called the whom? The Holy One of God in the Bible, right? Holy unto God. He is called the Holy One of God. And Aaron is a symbolism of whom? The Messiah. Holy unto God. Now, we take a look at this Nazarite vow and we say, how does that relate to me? How does it relate to you? How does it relate to... should we be doing these things? What is the purpose of it in the first place? Well, God tells you what the purpose of it is. We're going to go a little farther on down. Now, in many of your translations, in Leviticus 21, verse 12, in some of your translations, they use another word. And ye shall go out of the sanctuary, not profane, nor profane the sanctuary of his Elohim, talking about the high priest, for the concentration of the anointing oil of his Elohim upon him. That concentration is for the Nazir of the anointing. Remember Aaron had that oil poured all over him? Okay, what was it supposed to symbolize? What do you see? If you saw Aaron with that gold thing on his turban, and you saw his oil all over him, what would you think? Man, he's oily. Now, you know why. Unto God. So when one takes, or thinks they should take, a Nazarite vow, they must be fully aware that it is for a holy reason. Not for a casual statement, not for a casual thing, not for something you just like to do because, oh, I think I'll take a Nazarite vow today and let it last for 30 days, you know? That's kind of like, what are you doing? I take personally this chapter extremely serious. And I think it's very important that we take this chapter extremely serious. Don't take this as though it is something that anybody can do anytime they want. Oh, no. It must do it for one reason, and one reason only. Yes.
What would be a reason that someone would do that? You said...
Okay, every one of these Nazarite vows have a specific course and action to do. What was the course and action of Samson? Why was he a Nazarite? What was his function? What was he supposed to do with that vow? As long as he lived, there's things he must do in his entire life of that vow. What is it he must do? What did he do? Sorry, what?
He was commanded to deliver Israel.
He's a what now?
Commanded to deliver Israel.
Commanded to deliver Israel. All the way until his death. Now, Samuel is a type of Messiah. And Samson is a type of Messiah. Read the entire story and see it. We have this picture because, you know, this stupid song came out in the 60s. What was Samson and Delilah? You know, I don't remember the name of the stupid song, but it was made a mockery of the entire thing. And what? Now, Samson, we kind of look at as a loser because he did this, he had that, he did this, he did that. What's wrong with Samson? What was his object? What was he supposed to do? Well, let's take a look. Let's go to the 13th chapter of Judges, of course. We're not going to read the whole thing. The country was in real serious, I wouldn't say they were in, they were being seized by, or they were under the offices and direction and power of whom? The Philistines. They ruled for 40 years. And again, the children of Israel, chapter 13, verse 1, did evil in the sight of Elohim and of Yahweh, and Yahweh delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. God delivered them into the hands. I'm glad I said something wrong.
He said Philippines.
Oh, I'm sorry, Philippines. Well, got the P right. Anyway. But you see, there was a curse, right? Now they needed what? To be delivered. All right. Now we know the messenger came, or the angel came, and talked to a woman. And she did not know it, but he says, you are pregnant now. Oh, now you must do this. You must not. She's taking the Nazarite vow, in a sense, during the pregnancy. Did she notice that? She's taking the Nazarite vow. And did she say, oh, I'm going to do this because... No, no. She was ordered to do so. And she didn't object. She just did it. Why? Because she says, oh, I want to get pregnant. I think I'll take a Nazarite vow. No, she already was pregnant. She was told, you must remain this way. I have now, we don't know the woman's name, I am now separating you. I have now separated you from and for a purpose. Why was she separated for? To do something unto and for the eternal creator of heaven and earth. And that's what a Nazarite does. And, you know, when you decide to take a vow, you better check what it reads and find out, is this of And am I dedicating this thing unto and because of this is what the Father, the Creator of heaven and earth, has appointed me to carry out this function. Now, we kind of, in our world, we believe that we can carry out any function we want. All we have to do is pray about it. Hunky-dory. However, when you come into this situation of the vow, all of a sudden something comes up. And you say, okay, am I doing this because I want to do it? Or you're doing it like the lady. You will now do it. When you decide, anybody decides to take a Nazarite vow, they had better confront the Creator of heaven and earth really carefully. This is my personal, Richard Hage's personal belief. Confront the Creator individually, very, very carefully. Because this is, Nazarite vow is not something that you play around with. Now, why? Now, we went on here, and I'm going to go a little farther. When we look directly at this story, we find the hair is involved. Why the hair involved? Has to do with, remember, crown. Called a crown in other places in the Bible. Here, he addresses it as though it's hair. In the book of Jeremiah, it says, God is saying to Jerusalem, cut off your hair and cast it down. Your Nazarite is over with. And I am going to get on your case. And he destroyed the house of Judah. That's the seriousness of it. Right? Now, in your personal life, in your private life, what do you do? Let me ask you another question. I'm going to put some words here. It just don't mind with my outline think my thinking out loud right now, right? Unless you know this, my thinking out loud. In the book of Revelation, this says something. And the sixth seal, remember what it says? About the 144,000 and the innumerable multitude beneath. What does it say? And the Apostle Paul, Apostle who it is talking to us, who are these? I don't know. And he said, now, look and behold and see all these people, tribe, nation, and tongue. Those are four, by the way. Very fascinating terminology of four. We won't go there today. And he says, they have the what on them? The seal of the Creator on them. What do you think that seal is? What was the seal on the turban of Aaron? Holy unto God. 144,000 and innumerable multitude. Holy unto God. That is a, what kind of seal? A Nazir seal. It's made of gold. So, when you look at your life, you should be living a life of a Nazarite who had been sealed with the seal of God. Wait a minute. Jesus drank wine. Yes, he did. Did he take a Nazarite vow? No. John the Baptist was known for not taking wine. That's very strange because, you know, a priest doesn't have to take a Nazarite vow. It's not required for him. It's only required of the people of Israel who are not of the priesthood. Now, we don't know what John actually did. We know that he was a priest because his daddy was a priest, right? So we know he's a priesthood, but he didn't have to do that. But he was set aside for one reason. What was he set aside for? prepare the way. Baptize people for remission of sin in order that they will be clean and holy unto God. All right? So we look at these things, we start saying to ourselves, how does this relate to us today? Do you have an answer how this relates to us today? Yes?
Come out of the world.
Come out of the world, okay. Do not touch deadly things. Oh, don't associate yourself with, spiritually speaking, you associate yourself with darkness, aren't you? And darkness and light cannot be in the same place, same time. Life and death cannot be in the same place. And I'm going to say this to you again. You've heard me say it before, and I'm going to say it again. There is no such thing as a living hell. There's no such thing as a living death. There's no such thing. When the Messiah says, you should fear the one who can kill the soul. You mean that soul is still alive, living somewhere in death? No. It ceased to be. So we're looking at our life, your life, my life. When we look at this particular chapter, chapter 6, talk about the crown, talk about the hair. There's something in there that centers in on not what he's wearing. Doesn't tell him what he should wear, right? Doesn't tell him what to wear a garb. All he cares about what he takes into his mouth and what he does with his head. Association directly with hair. Hair seems strange symbolism, right? So the hair represents something. What do you think the hair represents in the book of Revelation, a book of Numbers? What's it supposed to tell us? Anybody? Crown. A crown. It's a crown, it's a symbol, it's a Nazareth on it. On his head becomes a symbol of that separating himself from others. And for one reason. Because God has called him to do this. When I look at the book of Numbers, I don't look at it as though anybody could do it whenever they want to do it. I look at it as though God is saying, now do it. You're not a Levite. Now I want you to do this. And I see examples in the Bible over and over again where when they take a vow and it's not because God said so, it turns into a real bad sin. Remember the men who said they would take a vow of death? They didn't kill Paul? That was a Nazarite vow. Ooh, what happened to them? If they broke their vow, they don't get it started again. They don't go, I think I'll go touch a dead person. Oh, yeah, I'm free. You can't do that.
I think probably hair also could easily mean cleanliness. You know, so you're shorn and separated from your past, your record maybe, in a way.
When you cut the hair off, you're back in with the... Now, you take what? Wine. You're back within the vine. Now, when the Messiah talked about this in the 5th chapter, I think it's the 5th chapter, I may be mistaken, or 15th chapter, I think it was, that you are the branches, and he, Father, is the husbandman, and he cuts off, he separates you from also the group and branches and from the vine. Does that make sense to you? You have now been cut off. Why? Because you don't produce? Because you did produce. And now you'll be able to produce more when it is finished. When God has completed his task. Is it painful for you to go through a trial? Do you know, like we just read there in the book of in Judges, God brought forth this. They didn't stumble into being controlled or dominated by or overruled by a more powerful government. God put them in that power and they could do nothing. And sometimes we look at our world today and we think of, oh, look, America, what's wrong with you? Do you think that maybe God is putting us in there? Why? Because, same back there during Samson, because you have disobeyed. And for 40 years, it's a long time. Let's go back here to Nazirite vow. It is a function you're going to be doing. And not a function for yourself. Nor for the function, I'm sorry, of the vine. Or the other branches. But you're going to do a function that has separated. You are now going to do something in direct relationship to the Messiah. Or in this case, the Father of all. Daniel, Ellie.
Is the hair cut off and offered to God symbolic of whatever it was that you were assigned to do while you were under the vow was to God, and that that hair is burnt as an offering to Him because what you did when you were under that vow was an offering, it was assignment from Him. And that's a picture
correct.
Of it.
Now the assignment is finished and completed. What do you do with the hair? Bury it? No. You turn it into smoke. And it descends upward. Pat, do you have a question? Bert.
The question is the difference between taking an oath or an oath and the Nazirite vow.
I'm just talking about just the Nazirite vow today. There are different kind of oaths the Bible talks about. I'm just talking about this particular one because this particular chapter talks about it. In the 30th chapter, even though it sounds unfair to men, sorry, it's a male-dominated book, right? If a woman takes on, decides to take a vow, even the Nazirite vow, but doesn't tell her father that she's going to do it, and he finds out about it later, by the word of God, he can make it null and void then and there. Same thing with a wife. If she takes a vow without her husband knowing about it, and then he finds out about it, he can make it null and void. However, he also can say, well, since you take the vow, finish it. It could be a damage or hardship upon her. God really provides and protects because that's what His function is. That's what the Messiah's function is. What is it? He will protect what? The fatherless and the widow. And women are to be protected. Why? If a man does that, he can't cop out. He can't go, hey, daddy, could you? No, sorry, I can't do that. God, you have to do it. I can't tell you to cast off it. Because you know why? It's serious. The man is supposed to do what he is supposed to do. Take care of his wife. Take care of his family. Take care of his daughter. That's his function. If he doesn't, who's going to get blamed? The wife? Not biblically. The daughter? Not biblically. You know who gets blamed for it? The father or the husband for not fulfilling his obligations. Happened way back in the book of Genesis, right? He didn't fulfill. He didn't carry out. Okay, it's getting past time. Got another question?
You talked about John 15 where he says, I'm vine and my father the husbandman. Did I understand that when he says that every branch in me that
bears
not fruit. bears not fruit is taken away. It sounded to me like you were saying those that were taken away were done so because they were bearing fruit.
No, no. The fruit being taken. What happened? He prunes back the whole vine. Now, he didn't just take the grapes only. He actually prunes the whole vine.
But are you saying that those, the every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away? Are you saying that that is a form of a Nazarite vow?
No, not that's not what I meant when I spent that. I was talking about when God takes the fruit of the vine and he prunes it. When he takes the fruit of the vine, he's cutting off something. What's he cutting off? The grapes. That's a different situation than that one. I grant you what you're saying there.
Okay, because
I'm going to go back
branch.
Into.
Okay.
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? It's the fruit he's after. And he takes that, he prunes the fruit, cuts it off for his pleasure and his pleasure. Oh, yeah, every branch, that's something different, yeah. Different story. But he is a husbandman. What does a husbandman do? You think God likes wine? Think God likes grapes? I don't know. What did Jesus say? I'm not going to touch this stuff until when he comes back. Well, but this changes the subject matter here. Just a minute. Next week, I'm going to go into the New Testament in relationship to the Passover, and I'm going to read and go through some of the things that the Messiah went through. So we see a pattern, see a picture, and see what it's showing us, see what he says. I try very pay attention to even the book of here of Numbers. What is it that God said is more important than what the people do? And what God says, what a Nazarite vow is very important to pay attention to what he says it is and not what we hope he will just bless us because we like to do it. He often tells the people of Israel, listen to what I am saying. Listen to my words. I am talking to you. I told my mother, my wife, this morning, I find it very fascinating. A lot of people say, I wonder what God's will is. Do you know where it's at? You know how to find it? Oh, I just pray about it. And I'll go on and do this. No. What? How do you know what God's will is? He has written it down thousands of years ago and repeats himself in minute detail of what his will is. And it's not that hard for us to figure it out. And this is the reason why I said before, I'm just quoting Jesus, the one, man cannot live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God. We either have to believe one or two things. Either that is the Word of God written down, or it's not. Right? And that's your decision. That's also my decision.